welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rezac. This is the show that gives you insights and resources on how to live a more courageous life. We'll be looking at men, the current state of masculinity, and how to create a more inspiring narrative for all men. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. Today's interview is a far-reaching one with an excellent guest who's been here before. We cover eugenics, gene therapy, kids and tech addiction, the COVID jab, and the importance of having a bit of rebelliousness in the human tribe. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Our ability as humans to set aside whatever the herd is doing, like, for example, during COVID, and stand in our own principles and values and show a bit of courage and moxie, if you will be one of the most important things that we can cultivate in ourselves and in future generations. I was mistaken during COVID. I thought people around the world, and certainly here in America, would stand defiant against globalists and big pharma bullies and bureaucrats who were threatening to take our liberties away. Nope, I was wrong. There were precious few. Now the globalists are preparing what? The bird flu next? Will the herd go along with more jabs and serious consequences for themselves and their families? Maybe. I won't be. None of us who defied petty authorities the first time around are going to be at all interested in any round two draconian bullshit. Will you be? Or will you defy authority as any human with courage is called to do during times like these? Let's go sit around the fire with our guest today. She's smart and feisty and asks all the right questions. Enjoy. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Jessica Rose. Jessica is a Canadian researcher with a bachelor's degree in applied mathematics, a master's degree in immunology, and PhDs and advanced degrees in computational biology, molecular biology, and biochemistry. Her more recent research efforts are aimed at the descriptive analysis of the VAERS data, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, in efforts to make this data accessible to the public. Here is my interview with Jessica Rose. All right, I am here with Jessica Rose, PhD, citizen journalist, writer, thought leader, truther, I guess, too, Jessica Rose. Jessica, welcome back to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show again.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, we did a show a while back that people really loved. I think I titled it Arrows of Truth. Really great conversation. I think we were all into the vaccine and all that stuff on that one. And I track your excellent, you do such a great job writing on your Substack. It's really, really, I get it delivered in my inbox. I always read it. And you did a series, a two-parter about eugenics a while back. And I was like, that could give us some stuff to talk about. So I reached out and thankfully you were game again. And I guess just to kick it off, you know, I wanted to give you a chance to comment. Like when I was younger and, you know, I'm a former liberal. My listeners know I was a traditional liberal for the better part of 30 years, right? And, you know, I sort of came from a conservative working class environment and then went to university and became a liberal and lived in New York City and was a happy liberal for many, many years. And when the topic of population reduction was ever brought up in any of the publications that I met, I always thought, it's funny now, I always thought it was reasonable. Like, yeah, there really should be less people on the planet. Yeah, that would be better for the planet if we had less of us. We're the problem. And I just never thought, I didn't think it through. I didn't think in layers, you know. I was just kind of like nodding my head in agreement that there should be maybe drastically less people, and that would be better for the people that are alive, and that would be better for the planet. It never occurred to me that perhaps this narrative was put forth by people that didn't like humans all that much, that it was maybe put forth by eugenicists that had a different agenda, and that culling my tribe was great for them, but maybe not great for me and the people that are like me. And I feel a bit foolish now when I reflect back that I would have just gone along, you know, just, yeah, whatever they say, you know. I don't know where you stand with all this, but I just wanted to kick off that I, you know, that I used to maybe be I would have agreed with the eugenicists when I was younger, that would have been a good thing, but I didn't think, what are their methods? It was just my abstract, like, complicity, basically. Like, oh, yeah, that sounds good. These are some smart people saying this, so it must be true. And I didn't look under the hood at all. I feel a lot differently now. But I guess I just wanted to give you a chance to kick it off with that, you know, I don't know if you ever was in the camp of, yes, it would be smart to have less people because that's hard for the planet or whatever, the way I did, or if you've always felt, you know, I guess I'll just give you a chance to talk about your evolution in this, on this topic.
Well, thanks for the compliment about Substack. Those two articles were not written by me, though. Those were cross posts from Archmedic.
Okay.
One that I work closely with. So, yeah, the reason I reposted that is because we were doing some work with some strictly like new and hypothetical ideas about whether or not CRISPR-Cas9 has been already kind of incorporated into products that have been put into humans. I want to repeat that this is strictly hypothetical for now. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it ties into this idea. Wow, I'm getting completely ambushed by my cat.
I had to lock my cat away because he's just going to climb all over and make a bunch of noise. So yeah, I relate.
he can be a handful. Yeah, the possibility that, I mean, it's not really a possibility that this is upon us in the future. It's definitely going to be. I mean, gene therapy is going to be commonplace before we know it. So it's not I don't think of it as a bunch of people necessarily, like, you know, rubbing their hands together thinking, we have to eliminate, you know, a certain percentage of people from the planet because there's too many. I think more of it like more along the lines of like Gattaca-esque, creating, like kind of using the hubris that we already have engaged and trying to make humanity more designer. And, you know, I'm not saying that there aren't people who don't have noble ideas about using gene therapy to help people who have, like, specific genetic defects. But, it just seems to me from all of the research that I've been doing and seeing being done, revealed, that there's a lot going on with these COVID shots that has yet to be revealed. And what has been revealed is concerning, especially from a DNA point of view, and from a gene therapy tool point of view.
You mentioned Gattaca, which is interesting. So we're talking hypotheticals, right? We're talking about we're trying to read the tea leaves. So you're saying, like, it's less this kind of Dr. Evil, let's kill, you know, 80% of these people off because they're an existential threat to us. It's less that than it is kind of, for lack of a better way of saying it, is like, let's see if we can perfect the human genome or perfect this kind of transhumanist, you know, can we make people smarter by merging with AI? Can we, you know, like some of that stuff that's in movies, Hollywood movies. I mean, there's a bunch of them. You just mentioned one where there's this kind of hybrid, and the pure bloods, the ones that aren't, are looked at as untouchables. They're the dirty humans, you know, or they're not as smart, maybe, right? That would be one way of saying it. I think I've heard some technologists say, well, what would be wrong? And this is a valid question, right? Like they're saying, well, what would be wrong with engineering humans that have AI already in them, that where they're hybrids? If you can keep their humanity, and you could make them smarter, wouldn't that be a good thing? Yeah, that's one thing I've heard is like, wouldn't that be a good thing? And I'm a little cross-eyed listening to it, going, there could be some real downsides to that approach. But yeah, I guess there's, especially in technology, there's this kind of thing of like, computers are our friends. And if we could have a computer inside of us that's partnering with us and making us so smart, and wouldn't that be great? And what would you say to that? You know, is that kind of what you're hinting at? That's an oversimplified description, but
Not really. I'm thinking about it more from a biological point of view when I was talking about the,
like eliminating things that could give you birth defects and such.
Right. Or you know, using it to do bad things to people. I mean, like, you know, I don't know. It's kind of sci-fi, but like inserting some kind of something or other that's going to disrupt an essential gene or something like that, you know, in a huge percentage of the population, which may or may not have already been done. But again, speculation for now, we don't have evidence of that. Mm. But I mean, on the subject of cybernetic organisms, fusion of man and machine. I mean, this was always something, you know, that I've actually desired for myself up until the recent past, because I don't trust anyone in these fields anymore to do anything to my body. Like, i.e., I would never sign up for a clinical trial to test out some kind of, I don't know, technology that would enhance my immune system, for example, whereas before probably would have been the first one in line.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Because the people who have the money to fund the research are all a bunch of, like crooks, it seems. Maybe not all of them, but there sure do seem to be a lot of compromised people. It seems to be the case that, money really does corrupt people. But I think we can think about it from two points of view. I mean, there's genetic alteration to the detriment of man. There's, you know, priming human beings to become more drone-like. Mm-hmm. And you can think of that in a couple of ways, like making them more dependent and mindless and soulless, such that they're, you know, they're really not human anymore, you know, creative, individual, independent, sovereign beings. You can think of it from this eugenics point of view, where you're actually making people more clone-like from a genetic point of view, like because, you know, some idiot thinks that it's better to look a certain way than another way, for example.
I mean, if you're gonna create this kind of you think you're creating a super race, you know, we're gonna engineer all the defects and all these things out of the human race, and you're gonna try to create, there's not going to be any variety. Part of the strength of humans biologically is the diversity. You're going to go against that principle and just try to create everybody the same. I don't know. I mean, good for if you're going to create soldiers or, you know, I don't, you know, you can engineer them to be, you know, super soldiers or, you know, you could engineer humans to never, to not have any rebelliousness against authority. You know, I mean, you're already seeing, you know what I mean? Like you could create this compliant, you know, without any rough edges. You know, and that scares the shit out of me, actually, to think of a whole race of people that are just, you know, go along with authority. I just like, where are we going to go if we have that, you know? I don't know. I'm just seeing movement in that area and all the stuff with AI. And it's interesting. I know a lot of people that are a hell no for any of that. Like we're going to stand on the other side as part of the resistance. It sounds very, you know, Star Warsy or whatever, but it's hard not to use those kind of obvious myths and metaphors when, you know, the things that they're doing and the things they're talking about in like the World Economic Forum are something out of a sci-fi movie, you know, out of Gattaca and stuff. I'm going to read you a couple of quotes from Noah Harari. So he's a Google scientist, I believe, but he's the WEF's kind of spokesperson for transhumanism. He says, we have to figure out a new age, unquote. And he said, quote, improving biology, this is all in a TED talk, and write a new code for life, unquote. So this is kind of what you're talking about. But he goes on to say, you know, he kind of mocks God a bit, saying that God really doesn't exist. There's no such thing as countries or money. These are all just stories and ideas and abstractions. And, you know, it's basically this pitch to give up your human rights. He says there's no such thing as human rights. You can't see it. You can't taste it or feel it or sense it. There's no such thing. So you can kind of see that on one side, there's this kind of sovereign human movement or humans just standing up and realizing, hey, there's this onslaught against God and life and human beings. And there's these transhumanists that are basically aligning with this, you know, it's a communist vision. It's kind of this anti-humanist vision. Certainly eugenicists would be part of that. And a lot of these leaders these spokespeople are revered by, you know, groups of people. You know, these are the futurists, right? And I don't know what to say about it to you other than ask you, you know, when people like that talk about it, is it concerning or is it just affirm, yeah, they're trying that? Do you think they'll succeed in creating this or you know, is it part of my take on it has been like, we have to watch out for giving them too much power, giving them too much credence. In other words, they're telling us what they want to do. If we internalize it as a fact that they're going to create this, we're actually creating it with them. We're participating it on the other side. Instead of being excited, we're really fearful. So I think it's important, and you mentioned it in one of the other podcasts I saw you on, to not take it too seriously. That, and I agree with you on that. I feel like, you know, we have to hold on to what we want to create and what kind of future we want to see rather than just doom and gloom what they're up to all the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's because we are who we are and we like problem solving. We're kind of designed to do it and we're categorizers and we need to do that in order to problem solve. There's probably a little bit too much emphasis put on externals, like they and, you know, this also ties into you know, us as humans wanting to assign blame instead of taking responsibility. There's a whole lot of that going on.
For sure.
And I think in terms of asking if I have concerns about future shit, I mean, I have far more concerns about what is going on right now and what happened in the last 4 years, because it's more telling than anything. I mean, I'm still absolutely gobsmacked that billions of people took these stupid shots, that they had no idea. I was just thinking about this day in the water. It's like, how in the love of Christ, pardon my language, did like, for example, Israel, you know, the first playground for the Pfizer shots, it's a rhetorical question. I know how it was possible, and I think I know why they chose Israel as well, but it's like, how the hell did most people just bend over and take at least two shots? I just don't understand it. Like, regardless of what, you know, third party politician or bureaucrat said about the safety and efficacy, why would someone not think about themselves?
Yep.
Absolutely. It's like, you know, it never for a moment of an iota of a millisecond occurred to me that I would ever need to get injected.
Yep.
Against, you know, to provide, you know, fallacious protection against some respiratory pathogen. I mean, it's like, it's absolutely batshit crazy that was bought after it was sold.
I know.
And so, you know, my point is, I just really hope that enough people have really gone inside, I say this a lot, themselves. And this is the hardest thing of all. Like, facing your own shit is the hardest thing to do. But, like, you know, ask yourselves the hard questions. Admit to being wrong, which is also perfectly fine, because we all make mistakes every day.
Yeah.
And feeling like an ass and falling on your face and getting up and going forward, because it's like, that's what we used to have resilience for. Mm-hmm. It's like, are we not doing that anymore? Are we not subjecting ourselves to, like, self-scrutiny anymore? I mean, I know that I am. It's just, if let's just pretend, you know, that they're going to go ahead with this stupid bird flu crap. Like, they have the summit coming up, or, you know, it's happening now in DC, you know, with the same playbook that they had for the SARS thing.
Yeah.
What are we going to do with all the people? What are we going to do with all the bodies? I mean, they're actually, like, they have little sections where they're signing people up to learn about how to deal with body counts. And it's like, what the hell are they planning? And so I just really hope that when they pull the trigger on this next one, that people just laugh and say, yeah, I'm not doing it again. Yeah. And I really, from the bottom of my heart, like, hope that the rebelliousness of humanity is alive and well, and that people, if for no other reason, then they don't want to be told what to do again. Like, just say, go to hell. I'm not doing that again. Like, I'm just not. I lost too much the last time. I still haven't recovered, etc. So it's about taking care of yourself and standing up for yourself in an actual and in an appropriate way, instead of, because, you know, like I said, some third party politician or bureaucrat says that you have to do right by, you know, grandma or whatever the hell it was that they were trying to make you guilty for. It's like, there's a reason why they tell you to put on your oxygen mask in the plane before anyone else. You know, you have to take care of yourself first before you can help anyone. And the way that you can take care of yourself is by like doing what you know is right for you. And maybe what's right for you is getting injected with experimental shots, but no one I know feels that way.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I felt the same way as you did. I couldn't believe how much compliance there was. Now, I live in Seattle, and that's a really blue area. So they're going to typically more than likely go along with what every, you know, they're going to go along with the herd and the narrative. But I could not believe it. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. How can me and like four other people I know in Seattle be the only ones not doing this? Like, I was a flat out no, just like you. And, you know, I think to your point about why didn't people come out? The only person that I saw that came out afterwards was Scott Adams, who was the creator of Dilbert. He's got a huge Twitter following. I got kicked off of Twitter for questioning the vaccines. I did a couple of episodes and they booted me off saying, you're out of here with that stuff. And I was just asking a doctor, is this going to be safe? And she was saying, I don't see the evidence that this is going to be safe. It hasn't been tested, you know. That was the gist of it. But he came out afterwards, and he was the only one, you know, with all the myocarditis and all the sudden death stuff and all the athletes collapsing and all the people that were in your circle that were suddenly having all kinds of health issues. He's the only one I saw that came out and said, you know what? I was wrong. I feel like a dipshit. I was wrong about the vaccine. I was calling these people anti-vaxxers and crazy for not going along with it. And now I see what happened, and now I see that Fauci isn't trustworthy, and there's all kinds of corruption, and I've done a deeper dive, and I was wrong. The unvaccinated are in much better shape right now. And he said it just like that, and I was like, wow, that, you know, that took something. I think part of it, Jessica, was it was such an emotional divide. Like, I was an uncomfortable presence and voice of saying, don't get them, don't get them. And I just think there was so much name calling on social media about those idiots are going to kill us all. And that, you know, we were supposed to die.
I wanted them to explain to me how and what they're like. I'm really, really serious now, not rhetorically.
Yeah. Yeah.
The people who said that to explain to me how it was going to be possible for me to have any impact on somebody who'd been injected with a so-called effective product.
Right.
And you know where I'm going. It's like there was never any logical reasoning, common sense, or science behind any of it. Everyone just really got brainwashed. And this goes back to what I was saying about the drones. It's like, and also what I'm saying about being more worried about where we are now and what we just went through, because the indicators are such that there's a huge percentage of people who kind of are droney right now. I mean, cellular phones, these smartphones. I mean, I feel like a broken record talking about this, but it still warrants repeating, because it's a problem that's not going away.
Right.
I mean, you know, people have traded in like touching and looking into each other's eyes and energetically interacting. And I'm not just talking about adults. I'm talking about poor kids. I mean, I don't know how.
I know.
Unless you actively, you're a parent who actively restrains the time that your kid is allowed to spend on these devices. I don't know what chance they're going to have for having good socialization, but it's like, you know, if it's just, it just seems more prominent than not that people are engaging with devices and more, it's just going to be artificial intelligences and bots rather than even humans without people even knowing. And this effectively and probably without people's direct knowledge is destroying your humanity, because human beings absolutely need to touch. They absolutely need to bioenergetically interact. They absolutely need to look into each other's eyes. They absolutely have to converse with each other. They have to build together. They have to learn from each other, grow from each other, strengthen each other, set each other straight. I mean, it's like, it's, yeah, I the insipidness of the digital era, which doesn't really need to be insipid, it really bothers me. We can have all this beautiful technology. I love technology. It's wild. Like I said, I myself wanted to be cybernetically enhanced. Why not? It would be great. But it's just everything is under the power of people without vision. And so it's just, I really wonder if there will ever be a reabsconding of technology, including gene therapy, because this is also a phenomenally brilliant concept if used in an actual benevolent way. I mean, we can really improve human health. Let's face it. If you understand it, then you understand the implications could be wildly beneficial for human beings. But when you have, three-letter agencies whose concerns are more, for decreasing populations because there's too much climate catastrophe, a big stupid lie. You gotta, I don't know what you gotta do. I mean, you absolutely have to just say no to these people when they demand to take away your rights. But it's also this thing about money making the world go round. We place so much value in things that are valueless, and I've said this a million times before as well, but it also bears repeating. It's like, we need to reassign value. Mm-hmm. And it's weird because the more I think about this and the more I talk about it and the more I hear myself talking about it, the more I think I sound like them.
Right.
We need to reset.
Jessica Rose's Great Reset.
Yeah, no thanks.
No, but what you're saying is resonating because, technology is amazing. I love technology, but my desire is to see it used as a servant to humanity's ascension and golden age, not as its master, which is what I'm seeing. And, when you were talking about touching and being in the tactile world, I've watched, and this is, I hate saying this on air, but I've watched my 17-year-old, when he was a little kid, when he was 6, 8, 9, 10 years old, God, he would love to go out camping and hiking and just being out in nature. And, we had technology and, he got a phone like all his friends, and we tried unsuccessfully to keep that limited. And as parents know, it's just so hard because all their friends are on there and blah, 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 blah. Now if we go hiking, he's so bored. It's like he can barely stand the physical, biological world because it's so much boring than YouTube and TikTok, whatever he's doing. And it's embarrassing. I feel like I failed as a parent to guide him through this and to be strict, but I'm not alone. I know parents out there are like, we had the same thing, but it's hard. I feel like I'm losing the battle to properly context technology for him. You know what I mean? Like, he's already now got his own destiny and path, and he's going to have to frame that and decide, wait a minute, I'm addicted to this thing. Is this a good thing? Maybe I should step away. But I just wanted to chip in with that, it's happening. It's mortifying to me as a parent. And I feel like I failed. Basically, I'm owning up that I wasn't strict enough to keep it at bay and to keep doing the things that I think, you know, we encourage.
Oh, but you can't be hard on yourself because it's inevitable. It's the way of the world. And I think I would never judge you or anyone because it's like, you can't predict what's going to happen. You can't, you can't really, you can't even really know what the outcome is going to be. I mean, depending on what your kids' interests are and how old they are, they you know, everything might shift one day. So it's a real hard one. That's why I raise this issue all the time. I mean, I really marvel at you know, people who are just engaged in this struggle because it's like the struggle of a lifetime. You know, I'm also the eternal optimist. I think the kids are obviously they're the future, and they'll be the ones to save us all if anyone does. and it probably will be through technology, ironically enough. But I don't know.
I get you. I love that you're an optimist. I'm also an optimist. You know, I talk a lot about this kind of stuff and where we're at in this conflict and stuff, but I'm also incredibly optimistic about what's unfolding. Yeah, there's things that scare us. You know, that bird flu thing, I don't even know if I really paid much attention to it till I saw it on your Substack. And so I was like, oh, what are they doing? And you know, there was a fear response reading that they're doing a bird flu summit, and you brought up a thing. You're like, you know, they're talking about what to do with carcasses, the mass carcasses. Are they talking about humans? Or are they talking about birds and livestock? They don't specify, you know. So I'm like, that kind of worries me. Where, you know, the as somebody that's a language person, you know, I'm like, what are they referring to here? You know, and I agree with you. Like, I saw something that said, you know, if they did now this is another COVID shot, you know, like a yearly COVID vaccination, how many, you know, Americans would get it? And I want to say it was like 8%, like some stupid low number that's not going to make, you know, big pharma a whole lot of money, you know, and just people aren't interested in it. So on one hand, you think, oh, they're waking up. They're not going to go along with it. To your point, like you were saying earlier, like how can they not realize how, you know, how dangerous this is. But I've often said, look, COVID was, I mean, they had to manufacture that. They had to sweep all the flu cases over into the COVID cases. I mean, they had to do a lot of manipulation to make it a scary, quote unquote, virus, frankly. And I always said, look, if they ever did one that was really scary to even you and I, like if there was ever like something that we got hit with where they were keeling over at the grocery store with blood coming out their nose, you know what I mean? Like that would scare
that's not how it's going to happen in my eyes. I mean,
you know, and that would be really scary because look how many freedoms they curtailed and tried to say, if you're not vaccinated, we're considering putting you in re-education camps because you're a danger to the rest of us or whatever. These were already sentiments that were happening in social media, and there was politicians and bureaucrats that were saying these kinds of things that was having us, you know, having our ears, you know, perked up. But if it was something that was really grotesquely like, oh shit, I mean, I would be like, uh-oh, here we go. This is really going to scare people. And people are going to be lined up to get whatever they think is going to keep them out of harm's way, right?
I don't know. I think that it's far more likely that the harms of the shots for the people who are going to be negatively affected by them. And no, I don't know what percentage that is, but, you know, I think this is far more of a dangerous problem than any new pathogen that they might pretend to introduce. And this, it might also be, you know, it's hypothetically possible that they're going to engage the public with the fear propaganda, there's a new thing, and it's just going to be laundering for the adverse events that, you know, continue to be, you know, rearing their ugly heads from these shots, which have probably compromised the immune systems of a lot of the people who took them. Not to scare everyone.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are a lot of things that can compromise your immune system. There are a lot of things that can cause inflammatory responses and, you know, hyper-inflammatory responses. Most people are inflamed. Most people's microbiota are completely screwed up. Really, I'm not kidding, especially in the West. Mm-hmm. The autoimmune condition rate in the West is out of control now, as are the childhood autism rates and et cetera. There are a lot of serious problems associated with getting injected with various substances. So it's just striking to me that everyone would, instead of like just tapping into probably something that they're feeling inside about, you know, something being wrong with them because of something that they already were encountered with, and addressing that problem instead of falling for the, oh my God, there's a new bird flu that's going to, you know, make my eyes fall out or something. So I need to get these. It's like, I pray that people, instead of paying any attention to that crap, because it is crap, tap into what might actually be a real problem, especially if you're not feeling well. Right. And it doesn't seem to matter too much, at least in some people, how far out from your last shot you are. These things, these modified mRNA, you know, gene-based prodrug things wrapped in lipid nanoparticles seem to be accelerants. There are many mechanisms of action of damage, and that it's not just about what they told us are in these things. It's about the things that they didn't know and or didn't tell us were in these things, which includes DNA. So
go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm hoping that people wise up to addressing the problems that they're engaged in currently, that, you know, have their inception in the past, and just focus on that instead of some new dream world, you know, pandemic preparedness plan that they're working on right now for everybody.
Yeah. You know, it's been so, as you're telling me, sharing this with us, you know, it's just struck me like how normalized it's been to inject ourselves and to take pharmaceuticals. It's like, it's like you, again, you skip over it. It's like, vaccines are good for me, so I will take one. It's like, wait a minute, you know, just, it's not hard to find what is in these things. Some of the ingredients that are in them, actually, it's been listed, right? And there's a bunch of things that we don't know are in them, right? And does that sound like a reasonably healthy thing to do, is to pump and trust this process? Like, I don't know. It's just like this blind trust. And I'm like, man, do you know what's been in these other ones? Do you, you know? And, you know, I was going to read you a quote and then ask you a question about it. But Aldous Huxley said, quote, "Medical science has made such tremendous progress that hardly a healthy human is left," unquote. I mean, he spoke of this in like the 70s or 80s. Like, he would be like, oh my God, look what has happened to human beings since, you know, since then. Like, the pharmaceutical industry is this behemoth, you know, and they just keep pumping products and people, you know, look at the state of human beings, like how much more unhealthy we've gotten in the last 20, 30 years. I mean, it's embarrassing, but also it's so concerning. It's like, what are we up to? What are we putting in our bodies that has us look this way and has this glazy-eyed compliance? We just, it's so weird. But I wanted to ask you too, you had on your site, you had I don't know if you wrote it or you were reposting, but it was batches for thee, but not for thee, for me. And it was basically an article saying, you know, Pfizer, they got, when it was their turn to get them, they got, separate and distinct COVID, injections, separate and distinct, different from the general public. So I just wanted to give you a chance to address everything I said, but basically, how come COVID jabs were distinct for Pfizer employees? Why would they have to be?
Well, lots of people thought perhaps they were given saline injections, which, you know, maybe. According to my findings, these batches that were given to the employees were really bad in terms of serious adverse event safety or adverse event profiling. Like one of them had 50% SAE rate. So it's like, yeah, I don't know why they would pick that for the employees if they were trying to keep the employees out of the line of fire. But again, it's like, it's just, well, all we can really say is that it's odd. And mm-hmm. You're not supposed to reserve, you know, certain batches of a product for certain people. That looks a little bit suspicious, mm-hmm. regardless of why or what it is, you know, that you have there. It's weird, and that's never supposed to happen. And on the subject matter of variation in batches, I mean, people don't even know this. There's not supposed to be any variation in batches,
right?
You know, and on the subject matter of modified codon optimized, you know, modified mRNA with N1 methyl pseudouridine substitutions wrapped in lipid nanoparticles of unknown and non-homogeneous size or morphology distribution. I mean, there can't be any non-variability. There's going to be variability out the yin-yang, which could actually probably describe or explain why some people are really, really sick from these shots and others aren't. It could be just that. It could be, you know, the lipid nanoparticles themselves. Maybe the product was degraded before it got to them, and that's why they fared fine.
I always thought it made sense that there would be variation in the batches because there was not a lot of clinical testing. So I always thought the rollout was the clinical test, and that if they could do some saline over here, if they could juice up, you know, these are the really juicy batches with whatever they're thinking, and a middle batch, they could get some sort of data on a worldwide population about, okay, you know, here's adverse reporting. We know we can multiply that by a particular number, and that's more like the actual number. They have a math around it, and I always thought that it made sense that it wasn't one batch because you can get better data if you vary it, especially if you have not done a widespread clinical trial.
Yeah.
This is the clinical trial. There's the people that took, so we know we're the control group that didn't get it. So, you know, our numbers look one way, the saline people look another way. And then the mid juiced, you know, batches have this data and the juiced up batches over here. And if you're a scientist and you've got access to that, you can kind of say, okay, what exactly is going on? Here's what we know. But again, this is all speculation and hypotheses. I have no idea, but if I was running it, I would probably have run it that way and kept it under wraps, you know? So I don't know if I'm putting my evil genius hat on or my transhumanist hat on. You know, so much going on. I love that you said that you're a natural optimist. I share that with you. It's weird. It's, It's weird to say I'm optimistic when so many things look like they're going to shit right now. And, but I do feel, you know, I do feel an enormous sense of optimism. I feel like, you know, my belief in God and spirit, I believe in the human tribe to figure this out. And, you know, it concerns me when we're so compliant, you know, because I feel that one of our strengths as humans is our, not only our inborn divinity and our connection with nature and the biological world and our connection to the cosmos, but I feel like part of it is our creativity, our ability to problem solve, and then just our natural feistiness, our natural rebelliousness. That's one of the things that I cherish about my fellow humans is the not so fast, dickhead. We have something else we're going to do that you might be planning this, but we don't want to go along with that because we feel like we can do better. That's part of what we have going for us. And it's why when I see so many people compliant to Big Pharma, compliant to the World Economic Forum agenda, like we're doing this, you guys all have to go along. It's like, let's not go along with what they're doing. These are just ridiculous, you know, sociopaths. They don't care about us. That I feel enormous sense of optimism that I know there's a lot of fighters and there's a lot of people like you that are standing up and making statements and taking viewpoints that are helping us. But I wanted to ask you kind of like, what has you optimistic right now as we're sleeves are rolled up? You know, you'd mentioned off air that, you know, it just feels like some big shit's going down. I know you and I have some different ideas of what that could be, but what has you optimistic right now about what's going on?
Just the reality and truth. I mean, it's all you really need to maintain your focus on. I mean, with the massive cloudiness of confusion created by media, social media, legacy media, even the, you know, the non-legacy media, it's like you can kind of take comfort, I think, in the fact that there are real human beings left. And by real human beings, I mean, just like normal people. I mean, I think most people, quite frankly, are very normal. And this is not what's portrayed in the media because, you know, for some reason, people would rather, you know, see someone get in a car crash than do something elevating, you know.
Right.
You know, we're weird that way. Mm-hmm. And who knows? And the predators know that, and they do prey on it, and they amplify the illusion. So mm-hmm. I think you know, there's no reason to even try to be optimistic. There just is optimism because there's illusion and then there's reality. I mean, whatever reality is, but you know, it's just, it's like I always say, go outside and interact with the so-called real world and touch things and feel water and breathe mm-hmm. air and make fire and catch fish and, you know, I know that it sounds kind of like I'm mocking things, but I'm really not. I'm being quite serious. I saw a photo of David Speaker and Byron Bridal in a boat somewhere in Ontario. They were fishing, and I really connect to that because I spent a lot of time in my childhood doing the same thing, and I really miss it. But it's like, you know, it's just wonderful to see them together in a boat catching a fish and being really, because it's like, not only did they meet because of all of this shit, not only are they like, you know, probably going to be friends for life because they actually have very similar career paths. They're bonding in like one of the most tribal ways you can bond, like man catches food, you know, it's like, it's wicked. It's like it made my made my heart red when I saw that. So, but I guess what I'm trying to say is you have to put effort into making that shit happen. It doesn't just happen. And, you know, sometimes there are complications and da 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 da, but it's like it's like that spirit of youth that we all still have somewhere inside. Like people need to grab onto that and like connect to it or reconnect to it. And yeah.
That's great. I love it. I love it. I think it's a great message too, to, you know, get out in nature. If you're a hiker, a camper, fisherman, you know, hunter, whatever it is your thing. I think it's great because everything we're talking about is how digital the world's gotten. For all of us, we all are in this technology world, and I think, you know, it's incredibly healing to get out into nature and to get your feet in the dirt and in the water. It's a great message. I think we have a ton going for us if we can keep some of these like old truths. And your point about like there's a lot of just ordinary, just normal, good people. And the media doesn't want to portray that. They want to, you know, divide us by, you know, who got vaccinated, who didn't, who likes Donald Trump, who doesn't, who, you know, who thinks we're in a war, who's not down with that. You know, it's just like they want to keep pumping all the clickbait stuff and pumping a narrative that is, you know, that we have to be watchful of, because we can create a narrative that's more pro-humanist. And I think it's really, it's not hard to do. It does take, to your point, it does take effort, but it's worth fighting for. Like, rather than just, you know, letting predators dictate the terms, we can stand in our own sovereignty and our own freedom and our own love of, you know, one another and nature and the planet. I think it's just an awesome message. And also, you'd mentioned on another podcast that it's important, like, to keep a sense of humor and a sense of lightness. And I you just mentioned like keeping your innocence a bit, keeping that sense of childhood joy. We don't want to lose that. And we certainly don't want to lose that in the next generation. We want to nurture that in the next generation, because it's a really, really vital, it's a vital resource that we all grew up with, and we're in danger of kind of like ignoring it as a resource now. And it's really, I think it's coming to our aid at a very serious time. But I wanted to ask you too, just, you said, like, where can people find you? You've got your excellent, Substack. Is there anything else you want us to know about where you might be speaking, or any kind of thing that you want to point our listeners to today?
Yep. Just before I sign off, because I want to go surf, it's dark. On the 18th, I'm going to be speaking with a couple of fabulous Australian women, Rebecca Barnett and Katie Ashby Coppins. One is a lawyer, one is a journalist. And so we're going to be covering modified mRNA, DNA, maybe a little bit about GMO issues with the COVID shots. Very, very intelligent, serious women. These two are, and I suppose I am too. But that's going to be at, gosh, what time is that going to be in Eastern Standard Time? Anyway, I posted it on my Twitter. So if you go to at Jess Loves MJK, you'll find the advertisement there. It's also on my Substack, which is the much better place to go. Jessicar.substack.com. I have a website, jessicasuniverse.com, but I really need to update that. I do everything myself. I don't have any like employees. It sounds ridiculous even thinking about that. So I just, it's easy for me to fall back as type A as I am. So that's where. So I'm going to take my own advice and go surfing, if you don't mind.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Jessica. I really appreciate your time. Go have a good surf. And thank you for sharing all your insight and your wisdom. It's so great to chat with you. And yeah, go have a good surf.
I will. And thanks for having me on again. And anytime we'll pick it up and maybe focus more on the stuff that we left off on getting back to your innocence. It's really important.
I love it. I love it. Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that discussion as much as I did. I so respect Jessica's intelligence and viewpoints, differed in subtle ways from my own, but still spot on in my humble opinion. And go support our sponsor, Stand Up Now Apparel. Pick up yourself a soft tee or a great hat to proudly wear as this war for narrative control continues and amplifies. It is important that Team Human stick together, regardless of race, creed, nationality, or political orientation. Thank you, Base Campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors, and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Base Camp for Men.